we do in our organization, we track people for outcomes. So we're tracking them as they enter our care. We're using nationally recognized benchmarks for monitoring depression symptoms, anxiety symptoms, PTSD, and then we're rolling that up to better understand how our treatment is being offered.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is using AI for addiction. I've seen statistics that said around 38% of people battle some form of addiction. And that's a lot higher than I was expecting. But addiction is a very complex and challenging issue that affects millions of people worldwide. However, with AI, innovative approaches can be utilized to diagnose earlier and also help people heal and move forward from addiction. Today, I'm with Manny Ensian, who is the CEO of Ripple Ranch, an addiction treatment center in Texas. So happy to have you on the show, Manny. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this space?
Sure. Thank you. And it's a pleasure being here with you this morning. I started out not really even wanting to or not really knowing anything about the addiction space. And, you know, I wanted to go the traditional route of just working in hospitals. I went to go get my master's in health administration. And in my mind, I saw myself one day as a CEO of some hospital that provides medical services, and that would be the extent of it. But what really I was introduced to the substance related space because of an opportunity that arose in my community, and there was a job. And once I got into the job, I realized that number one, this is a space that we don't really talk about. We don't really understand. Number two, it's not really operated in the most efficient manner and professional manner. And number three, it's so necessary within our community to provide these services. So when I saw that, I really got excited at the opportunity to go in and really better understand what are the areas that we can improve upon in regards to operating the organization so that we can deliver better care. So that's really, what was fascinating for me to look at this space. And it's come a long way since I've started. And I've learned so much about, how pivotal, the teams that you create can be to really making a difference in the clients' lives that we serve.
Yeah. How long have you been in the space?
Now it's been about 10 years, going on 11 years. Yeah.
Nice. And tell me about Ripple Ranch. How did it start and what does it do?
Yeah. So Ripple Ranch has been around since 2014, and it was started by a family that was really passionate or about substance related issues because they had a family member that struggled with that. Mm-hmm. And so I love that history and that background. I always try to emphasize that because when we had the opportunity to acquire Ripple in 2021, and then we expanded upon it and made it larger so we can service more of the community members. We try to make that same focus and just saying that we're here for our community, our neighbors. We've been doing such, since we acquired it. Ripple Ranch is our inpatient division. And so we offer inpatient detox care, inpatient residential care, and an individual stay for, a range of different of time, depending on their need, as they go through their process. And then once they complete, they can go to our outpatient center, which is called Continuum Outpatient Center, which offers partial hospitalization care, intensive outpatient, MAT support, and general therapy as well. So we try to have a full continuum so we can help anyone at any point in their
journey.
Their journey, correct.
Yeah, interesting. So today we're talking about AI in addiction. And I was thinking about this before the show, and there's so many different ways that AI could actually be very valuable in this whole space. Mm-hmm. And I read about how, you know, if addiction is untreated, then it tends to get worse and worse over time. And there's a lot of consequences to that. Is that what you've seen?
Yeah, that's accurate. And I think the topic of AI, and we've seen how fast it's advanced in just a few years, right? Since it came out, and ChatGPT and the different versions. And we're also seeing a lot of systems that were more commonly used within this space adapt, AI to better understand information. And I will say the important part about how AI can positively impact the substance space is that there's, you know, this is an illness that sometimes is unseen. You know, there's a lot of, underlying comorbidities that are associated with substance use. So it's not just substance. Sometimes they have an underlying mental health issue, depression, anxiety, PTSD. And using this data can, you know, better equip us with the ability to analyze a copious amount of data and then ultimately develop, you know, treatment plans that are more, you know, individualized. But data has been the missing piece, because there's so many people that come in need of care, and they all have different attributes. And if we can take all that data and really just understand it better, it really can make a difference for us.
It's a really big area. I actually interviewed someone who started a company called AI for Life. Mm-hmm. And his daughter, who actually now is in the company, but she, when she was a teenager, was quite suicidal. Mm-hmm. And he then was really focused on using AI and data to predict teenage suicide and get, you know, the children or young adults the help that they needed. Mm-hmm. And he got a long way, because apparently with suicide, there is a lot of telltale signs, like how their phone use changes when they're getting more suicidal, how they communicate. Little changes in the face, like micro expressions that people don't pick up, but the AI can, and micro changes in the tone, the voice quality as well. And so, you know, he's worked on that, and it's kind of a lifelong passion. He's still working on it, but he needs so much data. You know, that's the
absolutely
the thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a really challenging area, but I think he's actually set up a way that he's asking all these psychiatrists and their patients if they would consent to allowing their data to be used. And he's slowly, slowly collecting it. But that's the key. But if you've got enough data, I mean, the potential for diagnosing addiction before it's, you know, really, really takes hold would be incredibly powerful. Have you seen anyone doing that for addiction?
Yeah. So they're not yet. And I think, and I emphasize yet, because I think this space is at a position where we're trying to understand how we can leverage the data. Like, there's a lot of EMR systems, and unfortunately, there's some interoperability, you know, struggles. So there's a lack of, you know, similarity between systems. And that's similar to like the medical side. People go to different centers or different providers, and they aren't talking. So that's, I think, where we have to start to look at ways that we connect through the, you know, different provider types, whether it's inpatient, outpatient, or other support providers, and then pull that data together. But I think once we're able to do that, we can see, you know, a lot of data, as you're mentioning, come together and really allow us to better understand if somebody has a specific drug of choice, how do we focus in and pinpoint what is the likelihood of recidivism? What are the behavioral attributes that lead to relapse potentially. And those are, you know, I think that's what in this space we've talked about and we really are looking forward to. And there's a lot of, you know, people that are, you know, trying to figure out a way to pull this data together and ultimately better, you know, diagnose individuals.
Yeah, that is the key. I guess, you know, there's some big EMR systems like Epic, for example. That's a big one that a lot of hospitals use. But you could almost potentially get the big providers like Epic and the others to, you know, donate with consent, et cetera, all their data.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such an important area.
It would make a difference. And I think, you know, when we look at trying to understand the profiles, as I said earlier, you know, with addiction, mental health, it is a very silent illness, because you can see someone, you know, you and I can be talking and otherwise thinking that we're fine, but there could be something underlying, right? And because of that, we have to look at trends, word usage, what they're looking up on social media, how they're responding to people, their engagement, how late they're staying up. There's so many variables. So I think that in this space, we're really trying to, you know, be progressive and understand like where, how do we best equip our, you know, our clients as they go out into the community to continue to stay attached with them. You know, I can tell you what we do in our organization. We track people for outcomes. So we're tracking them as they enter our care. We're using, you know, nationally recognized benchmarks for monitoring depression symptoms, anxiety symptoms, PTSD. Yeah. And then we're rolling that up to better understand how our treatment is, you know, being offered. But we're really good at understanding when people are in our care. What we're trying to improve on is outside of our care. And we are working with some agencies that will allow, you know, text communication and engagement with clients to really understand how they're responding to, you know, a better rank or gauge their, how committed they are to their treatment plan. Are they following it? And then allows us also to engage with them if they're falling off the wagon, if you will. So that's really what we're trying to get to at this point.
That's very cool. So with pharmaceuticals, we have remote patient monitoring for clinical trials, for example, and, you know, checking that, you know, they've taken the drug and how they're feeling, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess you could be using things like wearables for some of these, depending on the type of addiction, I guess, because a lot of people are using wearables to monitor fitness, to monitor sleep, to monitor all sorts. Are you including that as part of your monitoring system yet?
We would like to, and wearables would be very helpful. And the reason why is because we found that there is a correlation between sleep and whether or not someone is potentially about to, you know, going through post-acute withdrawal symptoms, or maybe they're decompensating on a mental health status. And so if we can utilize that data and find ways to connect it, you know, that's really what, you know, I would say me as an operator, I'm interested in and looking at organizations that we can pull in. The problem is, you know, about this space, like there's a lot of focus on the medical side of care where wearables are pretty common. And so we're trying to find ways that we can pull that, you know, that technology into our environment. So we can better, you know, measure and understand where people are within their recovery process.
Yeah, that's really important. And of course, the recovery and the treatment is not one size fits all, right? So there's so many different types of treatments, from the evidence-based, you know, drug treatments or holistic treatments or counseling. And so something that AI really excels at is personalization. You know, we're using it in pharma for personalizing medicine. But I guess if you were able to get the right data on, you know, I guess it depends on the type of addiction that you're dealing with, but, you know, from medical data, from genetics data, from the wearables data, all of those different things. And also, I guess, looking at data from people in, with a similar, you know, a segment, I guess, and what kind of variables led to what outcomes, you know, what kind of treatments led to what outcomes. Have you seen anyone kind of doing that to personalize, using AI to personalize? Again, the data is a big, a lot of data you'd need for that, but is anyone doing that?
Not specifically that. I know that there are focus points in trying to pull in specific drug of choice and other diagnoses and medications that people prescribe to ultimately develop a better makeup of like, where, well, if there was another client that went through and had this experience, which would be similar, then these treatment modalities are the most effective. And I would say that we're able to look at that. We know that individuals that have PTSD, for instance, they might benefit, you know, a lot from utilizing more specific like EMDR and more advanced therapeutic interventions that will allow them to, you know, process through whatever trauma they experience, maybe as a child or whatnot. And so, there is data in that sense that's being utilized to just really understand like what's the best path for someone based off of what history information they have. So I would say that's utilized, you know, through our EMR. It allows us to better understand, you know, where this individual will fit in. But, you know, I think where we're missing is we're really good at getting people in the door, understanding them when they're here, but where we haven't in this industry figured out is how to do it when they're out in the community.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we always like to believe that the real work doesn't happen when they're in our inpatient.
Yeah.
The real work happens when they're back in the community, back at home, back at work, and going through these stressful environments, which is life, and yeah. and figuring out how do we monitor when they're about to relapse, because we don't want them to do that. That's more costly. That's dangerous, right? So yeah. I think that's the next phase of the space of just understanding how do we better measure when people leave these perfect environments, and what data can we, you know, collect to better, you know, understand how to support, you know, the clients after they leave our care.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's obviously going to be the hardest part.
It's going to be very challenging. Yeah, yeah. Because there's just a lot of environmental factors. There's personality issues.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of education that also goes into that too. But, yeah. you know, I would say that this space is focused on trying to better understand ways that we can, you know, reduce, you know, recidivism mm-hmm. and also, you know, provide ongoing care that's meaningful for the clients and their family.
Yeah. Something you said about children made me think of something else, which is virtual counseling. You know, I don't think human to human will ever go away, but we are seeing virtual chatbot, AI chatbots designed by psychologists that actually have been quite useful in certain circumstances. So where the situation is one that either the human feels unsafe, like children who've been abused don't trust that easily other adults. Yeah. I've seen good results with that there. And then also in cases if it's a condition that they might feel judged by another person. So I think those kind of situations, this kind of virtual AI psychologists, but it would have to be done with a psychologist or a psychiatrist as well. Mm-hmm. Can be quite interesting. And so I have seen some initiatives in that space, but not a lot, but a few. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there could be some shared, you know, support within our space too, because again, there's a lot, whether it be adults or adolescent, you know, there's a lot of shame that's attributed yeah. with even substance use and yeah. or going through a mental health issue. And so I think the more we can move towards, you know, allowing, you know, individuals to respond freely and, you know, allow us to get a better roadmap of where individuals are at. I mean, that's going to help us provide better care because
yeah.
we have a limited amount of time.
Of
you know, there's financial stressors, there's a lot of factors. And so
yeah.
the better that we can understand someone when they're coming in the door, it will allow us to, you know, establish the most effective treatment plan in an expeditious way.
Yeah, exactly. And then relapses is the other thing that's going to happen when people go back into their communities sometimes.
That's correct.
And do you have warning signs? Or, I mean, obviously you'd need the data for the warning signs, but would you typically say that with addiction, there are warning signs that someone could relapse, or is it sudden?
Yeah, there's a lot of warning signs. And okay. there's, you know, typically what we see is isolation. You know, isolation is typically the first sign that we have, or, you know, not showing up to you know, scheduled treatment follow-ups, not going to group follow-ups, not going to alumni meetings. That isolation is very key. Yeah. And then you'll also see that there's a lot of attempts for individuals to reach out. And, you know, there's a lot of studies, you know, I actually read one on the NIH yeah. that were looking at just suicidality with opiate overdose
yeah.
and looking at different words that people more commonly utilize when they have a higher potential to overdose and potentially die. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think if we're able to look even at social media, at how they're engaging and almost have like a partner that could just analyze their data, that would be very helpful. Because I think, you know, oftentimes people try to give warning signs to maybe a stressor that they're going through. But as I said, it's a very quiet disease, substance use. And people tend to do it in an isolated manner. And that's what we don't want. We want them to know that they have support. And we would love to be that person that reaches out when we, you know, get a trigger of that, hey, you know, someone's not doing well. And so that's, I think, that goes hand in hand with like the thought of like, can we have wearables or can we implement some kind of, you know, tracking device that can monitor you know, what people are doing and better understand what's happening leading up to that so that we can reduce, you know, those expensive hospital visits or potential death. And that's, you know, I think that's where we need to get to and utilizing the, you know, the AI that's available today.
That's true. It's all about the, as we know, AI is all about the data. So yeah, you would need to kind of look at what all those warning signs are and then where you could actually, what data you would need for that and then get their consent to, you know, help them by tracking that data. Correct.
But yeah, this space will, I think to get it to the next phase where we're able to better understand how treatment is helping individuals, AI is the way to allow us to do that because it's too challenging for any one clinician to analyze, you know, several different clients that they engage with in a month or in a sitting. So AI is really what I believe is going to be the key to us, you know, really getting this space to the next level and better understanding how we can improve our treatment.
Absolutely. I mean, all these things we've just talked about from, you know, diagnosing it before it gets too advanced, you know, getting in early, making sure that the treatment is customized, tracking things, you know, warning signs, et cetera. And then if we turn from patient care to rehab centers themselves, you know, AI can enhance efficiency by optimizing resource allocation and predicting patient needs and really improving the overall treatment process to burden, you know, to lessen the burden rather than the impact on the people that are working there so they can really focus on the patients that really need them.
Absolutely.
Are you using, have you seen anyone using that or are you thinking of using AI for that?
We are using AI for that. And we're using for an area that's pretty unique, I would say. We have calls that come in and we have thousands of them, you know, every time. And so we're actually able to track and grade our calls based off of like just the performance of our admissions people and just better understand what people are calling for. So we, in our call system, it is actually using AI to look for keywords that will lead to someone being maybe a more likely candidate, as someone that's more engaged. And it's actually been pretty helpful for us to gauge and rate, you know, where someone is because this is a hard step for individuals to go to treatment. And it's also a hard process for our team when they're getting hundreds of calls to better understand. So we utilize AI to really break out a script that will, you know, find what they're looking for, when they want it, and that will allow us to, you know, rank how we can engage with them. Because there's some people that are just exploring and that's fine. But for those that are really ready and are would be a good fit for our program, we'll be able to provide the best care. We actually measure that. And so our admissions team is able to look at that data and then make more informed, better informed decisions.
That's very cool. That's a really good use of AI. Are you using it in any other ways from like managing staff schedules or anything else?
Yeah. I mean, we use it just to analyze, you know, overall just financial spend on staffing. We use it for, you know, just looking at common expense. If there's waste within our operations, we look at that. We're utilizing, you know, AI to better understand how that is because there's, again, a lot of data. There's a lot of expense that comes in. And so, you know, that is a tool that helps us to better understand like how we can improve and be more efficient. Really, and as I said before, more on the, you know, care delivery internally, you know, we do utilize it to measure, engage where people are within their treatment while they're in our care. So we can see if they're, if they had a, say they had an event where they met with a clinician and it was, you know, very triggering for them and they were stressed out. You know, we're doing surveys that are, you know, the client is filling out and they're manual and it's pulling that data to look at someone that has a high risk of AMAing or leaving to see if they have a high level of anxiety, to see if they have a high level of depression, high level of PTSD or mania. And those things allow, they send an alert to our clinicians so then we can you know, move in and say, hey, we saw that, you know, something's going on. And it's actually a really helpful tool because more often than not, we're able to, you know, talk with them, meet with them. And then they're like, wow, like I really needed someone, but they were starting to isolate and starting, you know, starting that fight or flight response and they wanted to leave. And so we're able to catch them and help them, you know, stay here. So yeah, you know, using data and AI has been absolutely groundbreaking for us to just better understand how people are, you know, just performing. And when they don't want to talk with someone live about the problem, when they rather just fill out a questionnaire and we can pull from that where they're at.
Yeah, it's so encouraging to hear of an organization like yours that's doing such amazing work and actually already using AI in such cool ways. So where do you think, what's next for Ripple Ranch?
Well, I think, you know, we really want to expand our virtual offering. So it's interesting you brought that up. I think we want to be able to get more data and find ways to capture that data about different, you know, geographic areas. So across Texas, and understand how we can provide services that are specific to that population. But furthermore, we want to make sure that we're able to get more studies of just what our population is going through and utilizing that to really, number one, educate the consumer, allow them to better understand how we perform, and then also to better understand how we can adjust our therapeutic modalities to, you know, provide a more enriching experience for the client. So I think, you know, at this point, you know, we really want to just find ways that we can leverage and utilize the data that we have to make more informed decisions to improve and enhance the clinical experience.
Really, really nice. So if there's anyone listening that has been intrigued by this and would like to get in touch with Manny and his team at Ripple Ranch, you can go to rippleranch.com and see a lot of the good work that they're doing. Thank you so much for your time today, Manny. Really enjoyed it. Really interesting and really useful real-world applications of AI for people with addiction. Very cool.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you and everything you're doing.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.